And then we're going to get started, and I'm going to mute all of you out, and we're going to rock and roll. So hold on just a second here. Okay, cool. We are ready to go. I've muted all of you out. I'm going to do something a little bit different on this call than we've done in the past. In the past, normally I've opened it up in the beginning for some of you to get a chance to share how you've taken ideas from the past calls and generated results from those, which I think is a great idea. But today I'm going to do it a little different because I've got so much that I want to cover that I want to dive right in. And also, this topic today I think is so important, it really deserves time if needed for some of you to either ask questions or just share insights on the topic. And of course, if you saw the email of mine or you got a notice somewhere else, the topic of today's call, if you want to title your notes, is executive level time management. And I will say this before I dive in, as always, I want to encourage all of you to take the ideas from these calls and to put them to work. And then what I want you to do is I want you to send me an email at jonb@gecresults.com and share with me examples of how you're taking these ideas and generating results with them. And as I've said in the past, I put that out there and I put that on your plate because I think it's so important as leaders that we all recognize that ultimately the value we get from any call or a book we read or a message we hear comes from us making the proactive decision to do something with it, right? So I'm putting all the pressure on your plate there. There you go. Send me examples of results. So let's dive in today, executive level time management skills, and then again, I will open it up at the end. Now, first thing I want to just kind of point out and acknowledge is that, you know, for all of you on this call, and I can see who's on the call, I know we have new DMs, we've got division managers here. And so, you know, each of you really had your experience of running your business. For all of you, you're all in a unique place. You're in your own place. And one thing that I think we can all understand is that wherever you are in your business, and also another way of looking at it is, you know, during different times of the year, the time that you have available to you changes. Right? Your schedules are constantly changing. Sure, there are things that stay the same, but in the vector business as a district or a division manager, you know, it's a constant cycle where sometimes you got to put a lot of time in, you know, especially during the summer, leading up to the summer, and then maybe in the fall or what you might call the off season, you know, the ways that you can use your time is different. Doesn't necessarily mean you should just stop working. But the reason I'm pointing that out is this, is that as we talk about executive level time management skills today, I'm not going to be giving you a schedule or telling you, you know, my opinion based on our coaching business, what we've seen working with a lot of DVMs and DMs, how to use your time. Because what's really important is that you have a tool and you have a process so that no matter what time of year or what your priorities are, you can know that you're making the best decisions with your time. And the other reason why this topic is so important, I think, for us as a group is because when you transition from being a rep to a manager, the time management skills that you have to now implement are totally different. They're brand new. Because when you're a rep, the only person to worry about is yourself, right? And I'm sure for many of you, you can relate when I share with you and you realize, you know what? When you're leading other people, a lot of you managing your time is now about you actually have to start thinking on behalf of other people. If you think about that, when you're planning out a meeting, or you need to teach someone else to do something. That's a big part of thinking like an executive or managing your time like an executive is to what degree are you actually thinking on behalf of all of the people that you lead? You have to actually think for them. Now, hopefully at some point you teach them to do that thinking for themselves, but it has to start with you, right? So that's a different challenge as a manager that we deal with. Here's what you're going to get from the call and how I'm going to break this down. You're going to get four executive level skills. And the reason why I use the word executive is because I think it's just really important. And this is something that I had a chance to talk a lot with Isaac Tolpin about recently, how when he works with his district managers, he really tries to help them to see and understand and really believe in what they do as though they are executives. You know, it doesn't matter if your team has 10 people or 100 people or if you're Lloyd or you're running the whole region. You are the executive of your business. And it's important to recognize the responsibility that comes with that. Because with that responsibility, when you make decisions like an executive, or if you have tools to make the best decisions with your time, you have a huge impact on a lot of people. And this topic today, maybe more than any other topic, is one of those where as you put these ideas to work, it directly impacts your bottom line, at least when it comes to coaching skills, right? So we're going to talk about four executive level skills. And as we talk about those, here's what I want you to walk away from today. One of them is an ability to measure your decisions. I want you to think about this. Have you ever had a day where you just wasted it, right? And afterwards, you look back and it was like, oh, that was such an awful use of my time. You just felt like disgusting. You were just disgusted in yourself. Well, I'm going to make sure that today you have a process and a very simple tool so you can measure your decisions. The other thing we're going to cover right now is a simple way of looking at planning. I think a lot of times we overcomplicate the skill or the habit of planning. I'm going to give you a simple process. And the last thing I'm going to say about these topics today is this. Keep in mind that a lot of what I might share might be ideas that you can relate with or connect with because you've been really forced to have to learn how to think differently as a manager about your time. But just remember that you doing this is not always the same as you being able to actually teach these ideas to someone else. So just a healthy reminder to all of you to make sure you listen to these ideas with multiple sets of ears. How well are you managing your time like an executive? But also, are you good at teaching this to someone else? Hopefully, I'll be able to package this in a way where you can just pick up any of these three or four ideas that you get on this call and hand them down to the people that you lead so that your culture can be a team of people who do well with their time. So, first question I want to put out there is, what is time, right? If I'm going to use the word time in the subject of this topic today, what is time? I want to put a thought out there that might be a little bit different than how you're used to thinking about it. I really believe that it's really healthy for us to view time as it's an emotion or it's a feeling. Let me give you an example. I want you to think back to a time where maybe you were running an interview, maybe it was just the way you were running your office, where you were on fire. I want you to think about that for a minute. Hopefully you have one that you can remember, right? But maybe even cooler if it was like recently or today or yesterday, right? Whenever it was, I want you to think back to a time when you were on fire, where you were in the zone. And when you think about those moments when you're in the zone, and one of my mentors, a guy named Steve Linder, always says, you know, when you're in that zone, you know, you kind of lose sense of yourself and space and time when you're just loving what you're doing and you're on fire. And if you think back to those moments, you might also notice that your sense of time got a little bit skewed. In fact, have you ever had it happen where you're doing something and you're so in the zone that all of a sudden you look at the clock and you realize that time flew by? You ever had that happen? Whereas, let's look at the other side of the equation. How many of you have ever had a moment or an experience where it was the other way around? Maybe you weren't in the zone. You weren't your best. Maybe it was because you were unprepared. Maybe you were stressed out. Maybe you just weren't being present. You were worried about something that happened in the past or what was going to happen in the future. And I want you to think about in that moment, how did time feel for you? It probably felt like every second was an eternity. So you get the example I'm giving you, right? And the point that I'm making is that if you understand that really time is really a feeling and emotion, you start to treat it a little bit differently, right? So the question comes up, well, you know, how do we get it so we're always feeling great? How do we always get in the zone? Well, a part of it is this. A lot of the times when we show up to a situation and we don't feel great, we're not in that zone. The reason why is because deep down inside, we know that we've made some bad decisions. We know that maybe we weren't prepared, or maybe we know that we weren't, maybe we're stressed out because we weren't prepared. We're not present because we're just seeing all the things that are going wrong because we didn't make good decisions leading up to that moment. So I'm trying to help you actually work backwards here from, hey, the difference between being in the zone and not being in the zone a lot of times is actually how well you manage your time or your decisions leading up to those moments. So, of course, the solution here is, even though I've said time management a few times today, from this point forward, when I say time management, we're really talking about decision management. That's the goal of the four tools I'm going to give you is really number one is you want to be able to make quality decisions. And as a manager, you can translate that as profitable decisions. And number two, the result of that is you can now spend time where it's most important on things that matter for you. So the four executive level skills that I wanted to give to you, and I just wanted to break down that philosophy on how to view time. And it's just my way of looking at it, and I've learned that from others. It's just a way of looking at it where you start to understand that, hey, ultimately, you use these tools so that in the moment you feel great about the decisions you're making. Because what good is it to achieve if you're not feeling great along the way? So the first of the four executive level skills is what I call an executive level perspective. And just to make it handy dandy for you, each of these skills starts with a P. So the first one is perspective, but an executive level perspective. Now, what do I mean by an executive level perspective? Well, I'll give you a couple different examples. One example is this. Have you ever had a situation where you just felt like you ran out of time to prepare for something, or there wasn't enough time? It's almost like time is working against you. Have you ever had that happen before? You know, the bottom line is we've all had times where we feel like there just wasn't enough time, like time is working against us. And an important belief system to have, if you want to really be masterful with your decisions, because you're smart enough to realize that's going to put a lot of money back in your pocket and help you to be a better leader, manager, and help others more, important concept to realize is that people who operate at the highest level, they don't view time as something that works against them. They realize that the time is really, it's a decision and it's an asset. And the value of that asset is based on the decisions they make. So again, time is not something that works against us, but it's an asset depending on the decisions that we make. And the value of that asset comes down to the ability that we have to make quality decisions. So that's just one example. When I say perspective, you know, do you find yourself constantly wishing you had more time? And I'm just going to challenge you that you might want to stop and make sure that you're not constantly blaming not having enough time. Because that's a really disempowering mindset to really step into this call today. Whereas to be at the highest level, operating as an executive, we have to approach our business with the thought of, look, everybody has the same amount of time. So it's not an issue of I don't have enough time. That's the worst belief or label to ever tell ourselves, that I don't have enough time. Instead, we've got to make a decision that, hey, the result of my decisions is what determines really how I feel about my time and what's going to happen, okay? Now, here's another even more specific example of having an executive level perspective, and this is the one where I actually want you to walk away with something today that you can constantly use to measure your decisions. And the question I like to put out there is this: what would you like your time to be worth? What would you like your time to be worth? Now, any of you have a copy of Cutting Edge Sales? There's several chapters in that book that really project this idea really well. Adam Stock, in his chapter, talks about how you ought to come up with a number for what your time's worth. But see, here's why this is an important question, is actually because of the way that most people answer it isn't very helpful. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. For most people, if I say, hey, what do you want your time to be worth? That's kind of another way of saying, you know, how much money do you want to make, right? Well, first of all, you got to make sure you have an answer to that. Right? I mean, look, if you're going to plan financially, you ought to have some answer to how much money you want to make. Now, I know that for a lot of you, look, as vector managers, you guys are better at goal setting than a lot of people who run businesses. So for most of you on the call, you probably have an answer to what you want to sell this year, which will then equate back to what you want to make. But when I say, hey, what would you like your time to be worth? I'm going to challenge you a little bit. I'm going to push you a little bit here. And what I'm going to challenge you to do is make sure that when you answer that question of what you want your time to be worth, it doesn't just stop at, I want to be worth $100,000 a year. Because here's the problem with that as the answer to the question, okay? How many of you have ever heard this idea before, that the average human brain has between 60 and 90,000 thoughts a day? Have you ever heard any sort of statistic like that? Well, look, I don't think we should get caught up in how many thoughts we actually have. I mean, sometimes I hear that and I think, well, who counted? How do you figure that out, right? But here's the point. The point is, I think we can all agree that we all have a lot of thoughts every day, right? Every single second we're making new decisions. So I want you to think about this. How many of you have ever had this happen before? Have you ever had a decision that you made, and you made that decision in a matter of like a moment or a second that literally shifted your career or your life or your business, or maybe it just shifted the day for you? You get what I'm talking about, right? So why am I talking about how many thoughts you have every day? Because of this. When I say, what do you want your time to be worth? If you answer the question by saying, well, 100 grand a year, the problem with that is that we make decisions in an instant, not in a year, right? If you did, you'd never get anything done and you'd never sell anything. So how do you want to answer the question? Well, you guys are smart. You already know where I'm going with this. What I'd encourage you to do is to work backwards so that you start to think about your time, not in terms of what you want to be worth per year, but now go back to, okay, so what does that mean per month? Okay, and I'm just going to use a hypothetical generic example. You do this on your own. If it was 100 grand a year, let's say you work in 50 weeks out of the year. And by the way, don't get hung up on this being an exact science. It's not the purpose. You just have to get something to start from. So let's say you're going to work 50 weeks a year. It's $2,000 a week, 40 hours a week. Let's say it's approximately $50 to $60 an hour. See, I'm encouraging you to work all the way backwards. And let's say it's approximately $50 to $60 an hour that your time needs to be worth. Let's break it down to the minute. You see, if you want to be earning $100,000 this year, that means that if you're actually being productive for 40 hours out of the week, that those productive minutes need to be worth almost $1 a minute. Now, I know that as I'm saying this, some of you are going to respond differently. For some of you, hopefully you hear that and you actually get a little bit paranoid. I think it's okay sometimes to actually have a healthy paranoia about your time, especially when you're trying to increase your capacity, when you're trying to go from where you are to breaking through to a new level. You have to get a little bit angry, paranoid, upset, stirred up, emotional about, oh my gosh, my time needs to be worth more than I've treated it in the past, right? I mean, you sit here and you think about the way I'm describing this and you start to think, gosh, that random phone call I took from my Aunt Edna in Toledo where we got off the phone and I saw that we spent 32 minutes, that cost me $32, right? Now, am I saying that means you shouldn't have a phone call with Aunt Edna? No. It just means that if you're telling yourself you're working and your goal is to be worth $100,000 a year, which means $1 a minute, and you do spend 32 minutes with Aunt Edna or an hour on Facebook or YouTube and MyTube or whatever, you just have to be honest with yourself about what you're costing yourself. Because as an executive, every decision you make is either going to be worth a dollar or more a minute or less than that. So I'm pointing this out to you here because what I really want to encourage you to start doing is start thinking about your decisions on a microscopic level. And the result will be this. If you walk around and you start asking yourself this question, is this a dollar a minute decision, right? Because just look at it this way. Everything you're doing is a result of having decided to do that. And if you keep asking yourself, is this a dollar a minute decision? And again, that was based on one example. You can change the number if you want. But if you start asking that question, is this a dollar a minute decision? I guarantee if you ask that, you won't have a choice but to start making higher quality decisions. But all of this comes back to having an executive level perspective, which for some of you might mean being a little bit more micromanagement or paranoid or even a little angry about how you use your time. And I say those words carefully because you have to shift your intensity about what your time's worth if you want to get to the next level. But one last comment I got to make on this is that in our coaching business, one of the things that I've learned, I think this is a mistake that all of us make, is when we make a decision that when we want to grow ourselves or we want to grow our businesses, oftentimes we go, okay, that's where I want to get to. But what we fail to realize is that, for example, let's say you want to ship $1 million in your office this year. One of the things that we fail to realize is that if we want to finish the year at $1 million in sales, what that means is we actually have to start making $1 million a year decisions right now. And sometimes we make the mistake of thinking, well, I'll start acting like a $1 million shipper once I've done it. But if you stop and think about it, anyone who shipped $1 million last year was already doing $1 million things in the beginning of the year because that contributed to that year. So it's just a little philosophical, you know, thought process that's meant to help you to really get intense about how you view your time right now and about behaving that way right now, because that's going to affect your income directly for the rest of the year. So having an executive level perspective, pretty important. Here's the second executive level time management skill, and it's what I call executive level predetermination. Predetermination. So what does predetermination mean? Well, I like to use the word predetermination instead of the word planning because the word predetermined does a really good job of painting the picture that really the purpose of being good at planning is that you determine ahead of time how you're going to use your time. And so we're going to talk about planning or predetermining how you're going to use your time or thinking into the future, whatever you want to call it right now, as one of the most important critical skills. You know, you've all heard, in fact, I heard this at your banquet. I heard somebody quote Muhammad Ali, who used to say, you know, the fight is won or lost long before the crowd arrives and the lights go on, right? And what's that another way of saying? You know, the results of what happens when you're in the middle of the game are really the result of what happens before the game, right? So another way of looking at it is, look, your success a week from now, a month from now, a year from now is all a reflection of your planning today, right? And so of all of the skills to apply, you know, when we talk about perspective a minute ago, that's a mindset, which is a skill to apply. But if you're asking, well, John, you know, tangible things I'm going to really be doing on a, in a physical, tangible, concrete way, planning is the single most valuable use of a leader's time. All right? You've all heard the story of the sharpening of the axe. You probably even tell that to your I think that's in your Cutco training, right? I remember when I was running my branch, my dad gave me a book, and it was called High Output Management, and it was written by Andy Grove, who is the CEO of Intel for like 30-plus years. And Andy Grove, it was just his management philosophies. And one of the things he taught in that book is what he called a leverage, and how a manager had the most highly leveraged use of their time, which is another way of simply saying the single most valuable use of their time. He said the single most valuable use of a manager's time or a leader's time is time spent thinking about what they are going to say or do that will have an effect on their people. Now, you might think, well, that sounds obvious or simple. But on the other hand, some people might think, well, how can that be true? Wouldn't the best use of my time actually be to be out there running a great meeting or having a powerful conversation? Well, yeah, that's important. That's where you make things happen. But the point that Andy Grove is making is that when you actually build into your regular schedule, when you regiment it, a process of planning and thinking ahead, his point is when you think ahead, it's in those moments that you actually make the best and brightest and most profitable decisions that will end up affecting when you are in the business. See, another way of looking at it here is, look, if you want to run your business like an executive, you have to make sure that you spend at least some time where you're working on the business and not just in the business. I think we've all done that, where we get so caught up of working in the business, we forget to stop and take time to work on the business. Whether you're on a coaching call or you're talking to another mentor or a call like this or you're reading a book, you know, those are examples of working on the business. But the most direct example is when you're actually planning out what you're going to do when you're working in the business. You follow that right there? So predetermining how you use your time is important. And, of course, I can't just try and sell you on why it's so important, which is what that was right there, but I have to also give you some real tools. So let me give you four simple steps in terms of predetermining how to use your time. Of course, I'm looking at how I'm going to explain these, and it's going to turn into like 35 steps, but don't beat me up for it. All right. First step is starting your day. And there's a very simple process that I'd encourage you to go through. And here's the process, is when you start each day to simply look at your calendar. And look, if you have 15 minutes to do this, that's probably ideal. If you don't, you've got to be willing and able to do it in 1 minute. Because there's a lot of irony when someone says to me, well, I don't have time to plan, right? That's very revealing of their self-sabotaging thinking. Well, of course you don't, because you think that, so you won't plan, so your business is going to have trouble growing because you're not putting aside time to have the high-level thoughts that are going to make you better when you're in the business. So all I'm saying is no excuses here. You have to be willing to do some planning. Even if it's the minimal amount of time possible, you have to do something. Because here's the deal. Even though I'll suggest to you 5, 10, or 15 minutes for different exercises and action steps I'm going to give you, doing it for 1 minute can be exponentially better than not doing it all, okay? So I'm giving you a break here, but not 100% free pass to skip out on this stuff. You have to do this at some level to grow yourself at the level that you want to grow your business. So at the beginning of each day, if you can, take 15 minutes, 10 minutes, even 5 minutes. You could do this in 1 minute if you wanted to. But here's what I'd encourage you to do, is to take out your calendar, your planner, whatever you use. If it's in paper and writing where you can visually see the whole day, I believe that based on how the brain works, that's more effective than using something electronic. But at the end of the day, if you got an electronic planner, the best planner in the world to use is the one that you use, right? I own multiple Palm Pilots, Blackberries, iPods, Blueberries. I've used everything. But now I use a paper planner because I've decided that for me, I got ADHD, and the only way for me to stay focused is if I can see how everything fits together. And I use something called a planner pad. And by the way, if any of you want to actually see a sample of my weekly schedule in my planner, here's what I'm going to do. You send me one example, because again, I need to do anything I can to bribe you to put this stuff to work. Send me one example, putting these ideas to work and creating a result for yourself. I'll photocopy and send you a copy of my weekly planner, because there's actually some ways to use a written planner that make it even easier to, you know, plan out your time. But that's my tangent. Let me get back. So at the beginning of each day, look at your schedule for the day. And what I'd encourage you to do is write down this process, PEAK, P-E-A-K. And as you look at your day, the first thing you do is just predetermine how you're going to use your time, okay? Now, hopefully you've already done it before the day started, but you go through this process one more time. You predetermine, which means you just look at it and you say, here's how I'm going to do it, okay? The second step, the E, this is all an acronym, right? E stands for evaluate. One of the most important things to do is to question our own decisions about how to use our time. It's to stop and go, okay, wait a minute. So I've got an interview here and training here. What really is the best use of my time between these two meetings? Maybe previously you had written down, you know, plan out the team meeting, but maybe when you sit there and evaluate, you go, you know what? It actually would be smarter for me to plan my team meeting at this time of day, and it would be smarter at this time to actually take a 30-minute break so I can just rejuvenate and re-energize for the rest of the day. All right? I'm a big believer, by the way, in planning in time where you're not working so that you can work your tail off because you know you've given yourself a gift, and then when that gift shows up, shut off your phones, leave your office, and rejuvenate. Now, the whole point here of evaluating is be willing and open to make adjustments, because being an executive is about being in charge. And be in charge ahead of time of how you're going to use your time. So you predetermine how your day is going to look, then you evaluate it, and this whole process you could do in a matter of minutes. And then the A is you act on it, which means you just perform what's in your calendar. And the K is you know you made the right decision because you predetermined and you evaluated your use of time. See, I call that creating a peak experience. And one of the exercises I've given to many of my private clients when they come to me and say, John, I know I can be better with my time. So they say, okay, here's what I want you to do. Tomorrow I want you to create 4 peak experiences where you predetermine, you evaluate, then you act on it, and then you know you did the right thing. And then I'll tell them to elevate that. I'll say, okay, next week I want you to create 5 peak experiences each day. And the whole point is just to get in the habit of creating as many peak experiences throughout the day where you can get in the habit of setting yourself up for your own little victory. And you celebrate those victories, even if it's as little as doing what you told yourself you're going to do. Because, look, let's take a big step back here. As a leader or as a business owner, probably one of the most important qualities that we all need to develop, I believe, is the ability to keep an appointment with ourselves. Think about that. When you know that you need to plan out an important meeting, even if it's just 10 minutes, look, the difference between actually thinking ahead of time about what you're going to say and not can make or break the whole meeting, right? So create as many peak experiences as you can at the beginning of each day. Just take 5 minutes to walk through your calendar, predetermine and evaluate. And then at the end of the day, you can celebrate a little bit. Now, let me give you an example of something to do at the end of each day. And I first learned this concept I'm about to share with you when I was reading a story about Charles Schwab, who when he started his financial firm, I don't remember exactly, it may have been 100 years ago, and he had a business coach fellow who came to their company. I don't know, maybe some guy like me, right? I don't know. And this business coach came into the Charles Schwab Financial Company, whatever they were called at the time, and he said, hey, I've got an idea that's going to increase your productivity tenfold, whatever it was. And the way the story goes is Charles Schwab said to this guy, he said, well, hey, here's the deal. He said, what I'd like to do is have you teach my people this idea that you've got. And based on the quality that I think this idea brought to our company, I'll then pay you afterwards. And so that was the agreement they had. So the guy came in and he taught all of their salespeople, all their managers, this idea that I'm about to share with you. And it's a great story because afterwards the business coach guy got a card in the mail. It was a handwritten thank you card from Charles Schwab. Now you got to keep in mind, this was 100 years ago. Now I don't know what this business coach normally charges for stuff like this, but he got a check with that handwritten card for $25,000. And on that card, it said something like, this doesn't even do, you know, a fraction of the justice to what this advice has done for our company. So let me tell you what the tip was. Here's what it was. The business coach came in and he shared with their company. He said, look, of all of the time management, of all of the planning techniques you can put to work, the single most important thing to do is to make sure that whenever you finish a day, you've decided ahead of time what are the 6 critical things you're going to get done the next day. Now, he calls this the critical 6. Now, I'm going to come out and say, look, I don't think it matters if it's 6 things, but I want to share with you the essence behind this idea because I think it solves one of the biggest problems that we all create for ourselves when we have these huge monster to-do lists, or in other words, when we have more to do than we know we have time to do. Can you relate to that, by the way? Have you ever had that happen? You got more to do than you know you're probably going to get done? You see, the point of this process here is to realize that, look, trying to do too much it usually causes more problems than just asking, well, look, what are the 4, 5, or 6 most important things to get done in the next day? Because really, it's impossible to get more than 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 really important things done in one day. I mean, if they're really important, they require energy and attention and time. So that was the lesson. You might think, that's it? It's that simple? Well, here's the deal. I've taught that now through a number of different coaching programs, and I'll tell you that I'm surprised myself when people come back and say, John, that was the, you know, that had a huge impact for me. And here's what I encourage you to do is take a little 3x5 note card. I do this every day. I have a little 3x5 note card, and at the beginning of the day, when I shut my calendar and I walk away from my desk and I go back to my home and my family, the very last thing I do is on that 3x5 index card is I write my critical 6. And by the way, it doesn't always have 6 things. Sometimes it has 4 or 5. I don't get hung up on the number. But I ask myself the question, okay, tomorrow, what are the 4, 5, or 6 most important things for me to get done? And I write them on that card. And what I do is I make that little process, which only takes a few minutes, that's like a symbolic moment for me, where when I write down those 4, 5, or 6 things, I make the decision that in that moment, I'm making a commitment to myself that means more than anything. And I do everything in my power to follow through on those 4, 5, or 6 things. Do I always do it perfectly? No way. But the goal is just to get focused on what matters tomorrow, not the 125 things on my master to-do list, which is okay to have, but if you try and operate from that, it's overwhelming and it ends up being detrimental. Now, some of you might be thinking, well, John, what if the way my day is organized, I already know the 2 or 3 most important things, and I'm definitely not going to not show up because it's running 2 interviews and a team meeting, right? Well, let me give you a really cool way of looking at it. You might have things that you know you're going to do anyways. So you think, well, how do I still implement this critical 4, 5, or 6? Well, here's what I'd encourage you to do. Let me give you one example. Let's say you know you're running an interview, but that's, you know, one of the most important things the next day. Well, because you know you're going to run the interview, you're not going to not show up, right? Don't put that on your list of critical 6. But let me ask you a question right now. Would you agree with me that, look, if running an interview is really important, wouldn't you agree that taking 5 minutes or even 10 minutes before your interview to get mentally centered, grounded, and in the right state of mind is probably pretty important, especially if you want to operate at the highest level? You'd probably say, yeah, I can't argue with that, right? So what I'd encourage you to do is to put onto your critical 6, spend 10 minutes getting in a peak state of mind before my interview. Because you know you're going to do the interview, but it's that step right before it that actually makes or breaks champions that we don't always do. So make that the critical assignment that you give yourself because you know you're going to do the other stuff. So now you realize, oh, I get it. So you can actually get a little bit creative and you can think at a higher level. Okay, you know you're already going to show up to the meeting. Well, what's something you can do, hey, at the simplest level right before the meeting that you can commit to and that knowing you'll do that, as much as it sounds cheesy or goofy or like a pie in the sky idea, I can promise you spend 5, 10, 15 minutes getting in the right frame of mind, getting grounded, centered, getting rid of negative emotions, getting empowered in a peak state. That's going to totally affect everything you do. Make that what you put on your critical 6. So here's what we've talked about in terms of predetermining how you use your time. We've talked about a really simple tool to use at the end of each day. We've also talked about a simple tool to use at the beginning of each day. However, what I don't want to do is I don't want my style of teaching to stop any of you from using these tools at any time during the day. Because you know how when a rep asks you when's the best time to make phone calls? Now, my answer might be different than all of yours. You know, I usually will tell them the best time to make calls is when you're not on a demo. Because, yeah, it's great to make them in the morning. It's great to make them at night. But look, if your goal was to be working that day and you're not on a demo, that's then when you should be making calls. And it's the same thing about planning ahead or thinking ahead. Yeah, at the beginning and the end of the day is critical. But look, you want to operate as an executive, you have to constantly be stopping and looking ahead, doing it all day long throughout the day and constantly deciding what you're going to do next. Now, let me give you one more insight on predetermining how you use your time because there's a couple other ways to apply this. The other one is on a weekly basis. And what I'd encourage all of you to do is to take time each week, whether it's an hour or an hour and a half or 45 minutes, and go through a similar process, but instead of thinking about the next day, look forward the next week. And when you look ahead for the next week, here's how I'd encourage you to do it. I'd actually encourage you to start by looking ahead 2 or 3 months. And just flip open your calendar. And just as quickly as I'm actually saying it to you, that's how much time you spend looking at the next few months. the idea here isn't that you need to sit there and micro-analyze every second of the next 3 months every single week. But the point is, when we become more aware and more mentally in control over what's happening in 2 or 3 months, we're actually able to make higher quality decisions on a day-to-day, moment-by-moment basis. Because look, if we're connecting our decisions today to what we want to have happen in 2 or 3 months, you have a lot more confidence. You make smarter decisions. You do a better job of preparing other people that you lead, which is what a lot of this is all about. So once a week, look ahead a couple months, even if it just takes you as long as it took me to say that. Then look at the next week and walk through your week in your mind's eye. Visualize it. You know, I heard somebody teach yesterday in a training that I was in that the purpose of visualizing anything is to get your conscious mind and your subconscious mind on the same page. Because when you visualize, it kind of connects every part of you to what it is you're trying to achieve. I remember when I was a rep, Dan Cassetta used to always feed me Jim Rohn audio tapes. I remember one of the first lessons I learned from Jim Rohn was never begin a week without first finishing it in your mind, which was another way of saying, see how you want it to play out, right? Walk through it in your head, because here's what happens. And I know for some of you, as I'm saying this, you might think, oh, okay, sounds like it might be a good idea. Maybe I'll try it out. Or maybe some of you do this, and you're like, yeah, I can see why this works. But here's the thing you got to get, is that it's in those moments when you plan that you will have the most powerful, productive, and profitable insights. You'll have the most brilliant aha decisions when you're just sitting down uninterrupted in your planning. And why is that, by the way? Because if you know why it is, maybe you'll be more likely to do it. The reason why that is because when you've dedicated time to plan and not be interrupted and just work on your business and not get stuck in it, what happens is in that moment, you're not operating from a place of stress and anxiety and fear and overwhelm and fatigue. Whereas if you're trying to plan and make decisions on the fly, you're doing it in the middle of the battle, in the heat of the battle. That's not when you plan out a battle. You plan out the battle before you go to war. You don't plan out while you're in the middle of it. That's an awful idea, right? But we all fall into that trap. So the point I'm making is, look, if you do what I'm sharing with you, I can promise you, without any hesitation, and I really personally hesitate to make a promise, but I will, that if you spend an hour and you walk through your week and you start by looking at where you want to be in 2 or 3 months, you will have your brightest decisions in those moments. And that will get you hooked and help you realize why, as an executive, you have to do that every single week. That's what's going to help you create the type of thinking that's going to get you to the next level. So I'm just going to leave it at that in terms of steps for predetermining how to use your time, because I think you got enough there that you can put to work. Let's move on to the third executive level time management skill, which is the one that I think is least taught, but maybe one of the most important. You know, if you think about what we've talked about so far, you could probably summarize it by saying this. When we talked about perspective, we've really said, look, you got to value your time, right? You know, your income is always going to be a direct reflection of how much you actually value and respect your own time. And then we talked about planning and predetermining, right, which is really another way of saying, look, your income as a business owner, a leader, a district manager, a division manager is always going to be a direct reflection of how often you think ahead, right? I mean, it's just that simple. But see, how many of us have done this? How many of us have thought to ourselves, well, I value my time. We've planned out our time, but then life happens and something gets in the way and we don't follow through on the plan. You all know what I'm talking about, right? And so what I'm talking about here, this third P, is what I call executive level protection. Now, what do I mean by protection? I mean, you have to protect your time. If you do not have a plan to protect your time is going to get interrupted. So another phrase that I commonly use is you really need to get in the habit of interrupting interruptions. I want you to think about that. Let that kind of soak in for a second. You know, if you look at everything we've talked about so far today, planning is probably the easier part, right? I mean, how hard is it to sit there and say, well, here's what I should probably do with my time? But I'm sure most of you are probably sitting there thinking, you know, that's not the hard part. The hard part is executing the plan, John, because we have fires to put out. We have things that come up. Well, there's a lot of different ways to manage those fires so that they don't have to necessarily interrupt all your plans. And by the way, if any of you have any questions on how to apply this, or of course, any of you on the call who are leaders, I need to push you a little because I'm not seeing as much of this as I think we could see. At the end of the call, if you use these methods, maybe you don't use these labels to describe it, but if you use any of these topics for yourself and you're a leader on the call and you know who you are as a leader, well, that's kind of a trick question, you're all leaders, but you know what I'm saying. chime in and share with others how these insights are something that you currently use that they ought to really make sure they take to heart. But here's the deal. Protecting your time and interrupting your interruptions is not too difficult, but it's a new idea for many of you. And let me give you some really specific examples of what it means. First of all, let's talk about two types of interruptions. One type of interruption, the most obvious, is from other people, right? You have people constantly vying for your attention and your energy and your time. And of course, we got to be careful because there are times when it's appropriate to give people our time. But also, if we allow other people our time and energy completely unguarded, completely not predetermined, then what happens is we become, you know, we become victims to time vampires. Any of you know anybody who's a time vampire? They will suck every living second out of your life if you allow them to. Now, not everybody who works for you is a time vampire, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Well, when I say interrupting interruptions from other people, here's a good classic example of a executive level philosophy that you ought to consider. To only have planned conversations, or in other words, only have scheduled conversations. Another way of looking at it is don't answer your phone just because it's ringing. Now, for some of you may be thinking, what? How is this supposed to make sense? I lead people. I have to solve their problems. Well, look, there's a time and a place when you need to be there to solve their problems. But the point I'm making is if you don't have the ability to give yourself the gift of uninterrupted time where you're thinking, focusing, or meeting with somebody, and you allow anybody or anything to interrupt you, then that says a lot about how it's going to be very difficult to really elevate your connection with people or your quality of thinking. Because if anything or anybody can get your attention, just think about where that's going to lead us, right? Not in a very positive direction. So you might just think about, hey, I don't need to just answer the phone because it's ringing, right? Now, if any of you are confused as to, well, how do I apply that? I'll give you plenty of examples if you ask questions at the end of the call. But I just want you to think about that for a minute. Now, let me give you a specific example if you're concerned. If you're thinking, well, what about if I have a fire to put out? Well, look at it this way, especially those of you who are veterans, you've been around a little bit longer, or those of you who realize that you need to be constantly using as many opportunities as possible to develop others and to not just do things yourself. Look, if you have a situation that you're going into a meeting with yourself or somebody else and you realize, hey, this needs to be uninterrupted, or I need to give myself a gift of these hours today where I'm not interrupted so I can be present for myself. What you do is you ask yourself, who is the most important person for me to develop right now? And you go to them and you say, hey, listen, I need to share with you, I have an opportunity for you to step up as a leader. And here's what it is. I'm going to be in this meeting or in this situation where I'm not going to be able to take any calls. Because of that, I'm going to redirect them to you. So let's talk about some of the different hypothetical situations that might come up so you're ready to handle them. See, what you do is you don't just dish something off to somebody because you don't want to be available. If you want to slowly learn to teach others how to do something so you don't always have to be the one to put the fire out, you use this as a teaching opportunity, right? Too often we use the word delegate when we should use the word teach. But this all comes back to time management and even protecting your time, because I know you'll think, well, I can't do this if I can't have someone else to be there to put out certain types of fires. But it's not just about putting out fires. It's really about you deciding that when you're going to give yourself focus, you actually follow through on that. Now, let's talk about the last person you need to protect yourself from, and of course, that's yourself, right? Think about that for a minute. You know, of course, other people can be a distraction, but we also have to make sure that we go out of our way to eliminate ourselves from being the interruption. So how do you do that? Well, I'll give you my own example, okay? When I run a private coaching call, I shut off all my computer screens because I don't want to be tempted to see an email coming in. I mute out all of my phones, or I even turn them off so that I'm not tempted to look to see if somebody's sending me a message or calling me, right? I shut my doors. I tell the people outside of my office, or I put something on the door that says, you cannot come in right now. See, I will go out of my way to do a lot of little things physically that are really symbolic to me of, hey, I'm interrupting interruptions. I'm not going to let myself get interrupted. It literally becomes impossible, right? So make sure to pay attention to your own self and interrupt those interruptions. So we've been talking about protecting your time. I think that's a big one. And I don't know about all of you. I'd be curious if you want to share in just a few minutes when I open up the call, because I am almost done here. I got one more important insight to kind of put all of this together. But I'd love to hear either questions on how to apply this, or just thoughts on how you see, oh, I can see how I have been applying this or why this is going to help me. The last of the four executive level time management skills is, and of course it starts with a P, and it's very simply being present. It's being present. And this last point that I want to make here is it's super important when it comes to getting the most out of the moment. You know, when I was in high school, I had a lot of problems in school. I got in trouble a bunch, and my teacher said it was because, you know, I was a bad student. You know, I thought they were bad teachers. And of course, I had doctors who said, oh, well, you're getting in trouble because you have problems paying attention. Well, look, maybe we were all right. Or maybe we were all wrong. Who cares? The point is, I remember I went through a time in my life where, you know, I was diagnosed, given medication and all this about, you know, here, this is what you should do to control your focus. And during that time, that was right around the time shortly after I'd started working with Vector, and I because I was so interested in learning about how people work, I came across a book that really enlightened me to the idea that all human beings have attention deficit disorder. We all have it. It's just an issue of how much do different people allow themselves to get affected. Now look, you may not even believe in that label, and that's okay. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm making here is I came across this idea, and I remember reading this in a book. It said, look, at the end of the day, there are conscious things that we can do so that we can be more focused and get more out of the present moment, which is really the end goal. Because, you know, we've talked about a ton of different things today that you can do to be better at managing your time. But look, at the end of the day, the way you're going to get the most out of any moment is by actually being there. How many of you have ever had this happen before? You're working and you were just wishing you were playing or partying, right? Or you're playing or you're partying. And when I say partying, that's just my way of saying you're out having fun, you're not working, right? How many of you ever had it where you're partying or you're playing and in the back of your head, you're sitting there thinking that you probably should be working? You ever had that happen? You see, this experience that I'm describing that we're talking about here, a lot of people I've heard bring this up and say, God, I just feel like I'm out of balance. Have you ever felt that way? Well, one of the things that we've found at Global Empowerment is we've had this cool opportunity to coach a lot of high-level achievers and learn from a lot of high-level achievers. It's what we spend all our time doing. And one of the things we've noticed is that people who perform at the highest levels, they don't have balance the way most people describe balance. In fact, most of them have what I would call intentional imbalance. Anybody who succeeds at the highest level at anything in the world lives a life of intentional imbalance. There's no such thing as I work from exactly 9 to 5 and then I spend exactly this much time with my family. That's delusional, okay? That's a lie. That's not how it works. Now, I'm not saying you don't figure out how to spend time with people where it matters or you don't figure out how to take time on and off the business. My point is this, that oftentimes when people think that their problem is balance, their real problem is being present. Because look, if you're sitting there working thinking about playing, think about what that's costing your work. And if you're supposed to be playing thinking about work, and think about what that's costing your, you know, personal sanity, right? So the point I'm making here is to put all this stuff to work, give yourself the gift of being present. And if you're saying, well, how do I do that? Well, look, it's a constant journey. You know, we could get into a lot of different ideas or strategies on being present. I think that being physically healthy, getting a lot of oxygen in and out of you through exercise makes it easier. Because being present, by the way, is about being able to ultimately control our emotions, and our emotions are actually a physical experience. That's why the fastest way to control your emotions is to control your breathing. If you ever notice yourself getting into a certain emotional state, watch your breathing. Watch what's happening. Control your breathing, and you'll get your emotions back, at least in better control. So, I mean, look, we can talk about all sorts of strategies to be present, but it actually starts with caring about it. And I'll tell you, I mean, I've got a little Post-it. No, it's not a post-it. It's a little label. I got labels all over my office to remind me of things. One of my labels on my desk, it says, just be present. Just be present. One of the phrases that I have that I used to have on a wall, I don't have it anymore, but I saw it so much, it's just in my head, is it's a question. How can I give 100% of myself to this moment? How can I give 100% of myself to this moment? And if, you know, if that's the only question you ask yourself consistently, if that were the only thing you took from this call, I would think that you'd probably find that you're able to get more out of the moment and you're also able to give more because that's where you are mentally and emotionally. And to me, if you're going to run your business like an executive, learning how to be present and be with the people who we're with is a really big deal. I think it makes a big difference. So here's what I'm going to do. I am done with insights for me to share today, but don't leave. I can see who's still on the call. And one last reminder as I open it up for questions. And if you do want to ask a question, to prepare to do that, just press *7 right now. And if you press *7, I can see who's here, and you'll get a chance to fire off a question. Or again, if you're a leader on the call, I'm going to challenge you to either share an insight or share with everybody else. Maybe take something I said and rephrase it, or say, hey, guys, you know, something John said here, this is something that I've been doing, and you need to make sure you're using this. Translate it in your world if you want to. So again, if you want to share a question or an insight, just push *7. And last thing I'll say before anybody chimes in is, of course, be sure to send me an example. And as my bribery, of course, shameless bribery to you, is I will send you a photocopy of my weekly schedule so you can see actually how I use in a visual way a calendar. And some of it might look kind of surprising or chaotic, but you might learn from it. Maybe you won't. Anyways, if you send me an example of a result via email, then of course I will send you a copy of that you might learn from. All right, cool. So anybody have any thoughts, questions, or ideas? Again, if you want to chime in, you have to press *7 in order to talk. You got to press *7. And I think I can see on my monitor a couple of people who maybe are attempting to do that. I'm not sure, actually. Any thoughts or questions, insights, or ideas on anything that we talked about today?
John, Eric Ward.
Hey, Eric, how you doing? Go right ahead. Thanks for chiming in.
I think many managers may find themselves in a position where they know the value of their time and they know what they need to do, but they don't know the proper place to start in order to get there. For example, I know I need to dedicate time to conducting a PC with a sales rep, but I also know I need to be there for my sales reps for PDI calls when they're calling in. And the training and the teaching process inherent in being able to delegate that to somebody else, oftentimes through the learning process, puts us in a position as managers where we may have less profitable results as our people are learning how to do the things that need to do to help us. So my question is simple. What would you suggest that we can do as a manager to help go through that process, maintain the profitability that we would have if we were doing the activities ourselves, while at the same time developing other people to go and do the things we're doing?
Wow, what a good question. I'm guessing there might be folks nodding their heads. That's such a great question, Eric. Hey, here's how I'm going to answer that. I'm going to give you an insight, and I'm also going to encourage any of the other veterans on the call who may also want to help answer your question. Here's what I'm going to say. And again, what a great question, and I'm going to rephrase it and say, look, you know, hey, we understand we have to delegate things, we have to teach others, but when we do that, we're losing out on profitability in that moment. How do we teach without losing out on profitability? Well, there's a I remember I came across a phrase, Eric. This was a couple years ago when I had to start hiring and teaching other people in my business, and because I had problems with it, it really challenged me to hand things over and realize how can I hand this over. And here was the phrase of the concept that really struck home for me. And it was the idea, and it was something like, the mark of a true executive is somebody who is willing to sign off on somebody else's work knowing that they could have done better. The mark of a true executive is being willing to sign off on somebody else's work knowing that, you know, I could have done a better job. And if I remember, the phrase was something like, and not always having to rub that into people's faces. But now that, by the way, what I just shared with you doesn't solve your problem. But the first step, Eric, I think, is a lot of people have to accept that part of the process of teaching others is knowing that there will be a period of time where, of course, they're not going to get the results that you want. Because here's the problem, is if we don't accept that, then we don't ever fully allow ourselves to hand something to them and to teach them the right way. Now, once you can accept that, then the next step is this: to make sure that when you do teach something to somebody, that in the early stages of teaching, and you'll notice I don't use the word delegate. I think it causes too many problems. I think whenever we think delegate, we have to actually think teach, right? In the early stages of teaching, we have to spend more time. In fact, it might even feel like an unreasonable amount of time holding somebody's hand during the process. Look at it this way. A good analogy I've used with other DVMs is think about when you launch a rep. And, you know, you got day two PDI, and think about the amount of PDI you do during the first several days. And if you think about it, you realize, well, you have to do that because you have to manage their emotions and their learning curve. Well, really, anytime you're teaching any of your managers anything, you really actually ought to view it like you just launched a new rep into a new process, where at the very beginning, you actually do have to micromanage the learning process. Because I think, Eric, one of the problems that we create for ourselves is we think, okay, I'm going to delegate. I'm so excited. I'm a manager now. I'm going to delegate. I try and hand something over, and I don't really want to fully invest all that time, and maybe I put a little bit of time. But then the problem is because I don't micromanage in the beginning, they end up never doing it the right way, and I'm constantly putting out fires. So I'm just sharing that just as an observation. By the way, I got to make sure I'm pointing this out. In no way am I saying that you are not amazing at delegating. You probably have learned enough. You're able to ask a question as good as the one you asked. So does anything I just shared help at all, or does that make any sense, or do you have any follow-up question to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess there really is no short-term instant fix. This is more of a development thing you have to do longer term to be able to protect your time.
Yeah,
so I guess
exactly.
To answer the question, it needs to start now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Cool. You know, I appreciate that. Anyone else have any insight on that or any other questions or thoughts?
You know, one thought, this is Lloyd, Eric, is that, you know, in the process of you teaching or you getting this, you know, done, you may not be able to do everything. So what you have to do is you have to prioritize what are the things that move the needle the most. I mean, like a DVM, if you bring in a brand new PSM or DOM or whatever, you know, sometimes they can't handle everything you need them to handle at that point. So like John said, it may take time for you to get their skill level up, whatever. But there's enough, you have to determine what's the result that needs to happen. And so what do you have to do yourself to protect those results? So like for me, as an example, when I was a new DVM, and I had as a DVM, I brought in a new person, you know, I have to go, okay, so how many people do I need to set for training this week to where I know that even if they don't get the same results that I would get, I'll have enough cushion in there that if everything, you know, didn't go up to par for what they needed to do, I'm still going to get the same results. I'm going to get at least the minimum amount of results that I need out of my people, you know. So same thing would go with PDI. Well, no, I can't PDI all 50 people on the team and do my PCs and run the interviews. But, you know, I know if I set 20 people for training and I can load up two big interviews, I'll have enough results from that I'll get enough people in training that I know that I'll be able to get the results I need. If I could talk to my top 12 people and really impact them, you know, maybe I don't get to all 50. Maybe they don't step up to the plate exactly where I need. But I know if I can get what I need out of these top 12, I'm going to get the result that I need for that week. So you can kind of break it down backwards, what you need to get done and what you can do yourself while you're training them to take up the rest. I mean, it's rare that we get 100% out of 100% of all opportunities. But if you break it down, you can afford to lose something because you've thought it through and you know how to get done what you need to get done, you know, with the time you do have. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thanks, Lloyd.
So don't just like, yeah, anyway. You know, the only other thing I'll add is just the processes that John is talking about on this call. You guys have heard me preach a lot of these principles for many, many years. But these things, I really believe, have been the tools that have allowed me to get ahead of, you know, to get ahead in this business. You know, they've been things that separated me from peers. They've been things that have helped me to accelerate in my leadership ability and to win national championships and to perform at a higher level and to really elevate myself in the business. Really, I'd have to put so much of it based on these exact four steps that John's talking about here. This is the real deal stuff. And if you'll be disciplined enough to just give yourself that focus time to do it, it'll work so good that you'll actually have to be more disciplined to keep doing it, because you'll get such good results from it, you'll feel like, I don't need it anymore. It's that powerful. It's that good. So I'll leave that endorsement with you guys, and I'm going to mute out at this point.
If anyone else, Lloyd, I really appreciate that. If anyone else wants to chime in, *7, and while I'm looking to see if anyone else has a question or a thought, I'll share just a follow-up idea. I once heard somebody say, this was at a time management seminar for coaches, somebody was talking about how in life there's two ways to solve a problem, two ways to deal with a problem. One of them is after it happens, and the other is before it happens. And you know, going back to this great question you brought up, Eric, if you think about, hey, I want to be good at teaching other people so I don't have to do everything, well, it's in your moments when you're planning. It's in those moments when you ask great questions like, hey, what do I need to do this week so that next week my people are ready to take this PDI? And it's in those moments when you realize, oh, I need to invest time today or tomorrow or this week or next week so that when whatever event shows up, people are prepared. And that might sound like just one small, simple example, but as a manager, the more often you're thinking ahead on behalf of what do I need to do to prepare my people for whatever it is you want them to be prepared for in the future, you realize that's the most important, at least in my opinion, that's the most important thinking you should ever be doing, is what do I want my people to be able to do, and what do I need to do to get them prepared? And you have to do that looking at a calendar. That can't be done just while driving in the car. You have to actually look at a calendar, because the brain is not meant to be able to conceptualize time just without having a visual tool to look at. So when you're sitting down planning during that hour once a week, that's when you make those, when you come up with those thoughts that are going to solve ahead of time problems related to teaching people or handing something over. You ask the question, hey, what are all the things that are going to go wrong if I tried to hand this over? And one by one, you figure out how you're going to get in the way of those things interrupting. So cool. Any other, anyone else want to press *7 if you have any thoughts, questions, or ideas related to these topics of executive level time management? I don't see anybody else attempting to do that. So if that's the case, then we can call it. We can call it a call. Anyone else have any questions, thoughts, or ideas? Again, you would press *7 to chime in. And if not, that's okay. Anyone else out there? Any thoughts, questions, or ideas? All right. Well, here will be my last comment then, unless, of course, anyone else wanted to chime in. Again, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, sorry, John. You know, I thought I'd pose this question just for the group, and that's, you know, I've tried to get people to use focus time forever and ever and ever. What's the best tip you can give people to actually get that habit in place and to get it started? You know, sometimes people will say, okay, I'm going to, you know, they get excited and they go, I'm going to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. You know, they do it for a couple of days, and, you know, then, you know, interruptions in their life happen, and, you know, they blink, and 3 weeks have gone by, and they haven't put any focus time in, you know. Any things you can help them to not, you know, get excited and do it for a couple of days and lose it, you know, whether it's, hey, look, do it when it's a time that you normally would have time and you're not forcing it, or, you know, or other steps that, you know, different things you could give them, like, well, you know, tie a string around your finger. I don't know. You get the idea of what I'm asking, I think. So.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, here's two quick insights on that. What a good question. One of them, Lloyd, is I have a box of 3x5 note cards that sits in the top drawer of my desk. In this box, these cards are there for nothing other than writing down my critical six. So I guess the first point is, if you want to use the tool the way I described it, or however you want to do it, you've got to make sure that you eliminate excuses. Oh, I don't have 3x5 cards, whatever. Well, so get them and put them on your desk. Now, that's not going to solve everybody's problem. You know, the next step, Lloyd, is if if anybody's listening and they're thinking, all right, well, these are good ideas, but God, my challenge is, you know, how am I going to hold myself accountable? Well, don't. Self-accountability is kind of a flawed concept because it's real easy. For, you know, you guys are all professional salespeople, which means the easiest person for you to rationalize something to is yourself because you feel like, well, I'm not hurting my integrity with anybody else. So what I put out there is, look, if you've gotten one idea today that you think, I want to make sure I use this, but I don't want to drop the ball, then grab a partner. And there's two ways to look at it. Either grab another DM who can be your partner, who you talk to once a week for 10 minutes or once a week for or once a day for 5 minutes, whatever. Or make it someone in your office who you want to use this tip as an example to teach to them. Because, of course, the best way to teach it is to show them that you're doing it. But I'll take one step further back, Lloyd, and I just have to be really direct and honest about my opinion because the question is so important. I think at the end of the day, the topics that we talked about today come down to self-respect. They come down to how much do I really respect myself as a business owner? Because I think that what most of you will find is that planning your time is it's the single fastest way to respect your time. And I know that might be kind of a weird or different way of thinking about it, but it's really how you got to look at it. And I purposefully use those words of self-respect with the hope that that actually does irritate some of you. Because if you think about it, your choice of how you use your time is more important than anyone else in your own organization, right? I mean, your assistant managers, your reps, your receptionist. I mean, hey, what they do with their time is great, but what you do affects the most amount of people. So you have to view planning, whether it's 5 minutes at the end of the day or an hour each week, you have to view that as your greatest sign of self-respect. Because if you're not doing that, then there's just a lack of awareness that that's the greatest way to give yourself a gift that's going to affect your business the most. So I know that's a different way of looking at it, but I'm throwing that out there, hoping it stimulates some of you to think, hey, maybe I should get on a couple of these habits, even if at the smallest level. Lloyd, I don't know if that was, if in any way that answered your question or the thought you put out there.
No, yeah, that was great.
Cool. Any other thoughts, questions, insights from anybody? All right. Well, Lloyd in Southwest Region, I think I'm going to call it a call. If you guys want to mark your calendars right now, the next call is Wednesday the 10th, same time, same place. And again, all of you get emails from me, so just make sure if you think you're not getting them, check your junk mailbox or your spam folder. But that's it, everybody. Thanks for a great call today. Yeah.
John, as you get emails in from the guys, I know you've asked them to send you some emails and some things, or if they get some different questions on this topic and you answer them, is that something that you can maybe answer back as like a reply all so that people can benefit from seeing the interchange that you might have on some of these questions that come out?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Well, most of what I've had people send in are examples of results that they've generated.
Okay.
And I can copy everyone else on those. Although I think I would need to double check to make sure that as people send those, they're okay with everyone else seeing it.
Sure.
Sometimes it's personal stuff, but sure.
Where it's you know, appropriate to share, because obviously I think there's a lot of times people don't even know the questions to ask, and having somebody else ask or to share, you know, is very positive in their, you know, understanding moving forward. So anyway,
yeah.
Thanks again, Don. Great call today.
Cool. All right, everybody. Take care. Have a great week.